Live when I finished counting that. There we are. Hey, folks. Thanks for being on the BAMF podcast. This is your host, Mike Lafferty. Today, we have directly beneath me, Craig Campbell from Nerdburger Games. How you doing, Craig?
Good. How are you?
All right. Pleasure to have you. And seated below Craig is Jacob Blackman and Walt Rebilliard. How you guys doing?
We live.
All right. So real fast, let's look at WandaVision and see what we all think about this. This is a trailer coming soon on Disney Plus. You guys hear this?
Oh, we have five paths.
This is our home now. I want us to fit in.
Oh, this is gonna be a gas.
Where did you two move from? How long have you been married, and why don't you have children yet?
Hey, it's the mom from that 70s show.
I think what my wife means to say is that we moved from...
Moved from where? Married when? Damn it, why?
Oh, Arthur, stop it. Stop it. Stop it. Stop it.
Creepiness.
Yeah.
Am I dead?
No. Why would you think that?
Because you are.
Who is that?
I think she's been on some comedies.
Yeah.
We are an unusual couple, you know.
Oh, I don't think that was ever in question.
So that's a Disney show. How about that?
I think they're intrigued.
Yeah, I think they're going for that New Mutants vibe.
Craig, what do you think, since you're the guest?
I have a feeling it's going to be a wacky mystery comedy. We're going to, like, what is going on? Why are they, you know, jumping through these different, essentially, kind of television formats, and what's real, what's not, like, why are they doing this? One of the characters is dead, like, but at the same time, one of the characters is like a ridiculously powerful AI, so, and one of them is a very powerful witch. So who knows? Like, this, everything that's happening in this show could have been happening in the moments before Vision dies. Like, they've done that shtick, right? Where there's been a movie here and there where, like, the whole movie is like the death throes of somebody's mind. And I mean, who knows what it could be? Have we heard anything about, like, is this just going to be kind of a one-off season? They're going to kind of, or do you know, is there potentially more?
There's no talk about a season two yet, but there probably wouldn't be this early.
Right, but sometimes they announce it as specifically this is going to be a limited series and it's going to, you know, just be one season, which would make me think that it might be a little weird. You know, they could, it opens up possibilities of like some weird thing like that if it's just going to be one season. Like, we'll solve the mystery at the end and that's it. But if it's a show that can keep going, then it, you know, there's other options have to be explored about why.
I've heard rumors that they're going to have Wanda Maximoff in Doctor Strange 2, in which case it kind of makes sense to use this to kind of, you know, if there's a, you know, to sort of point viewers towards that, you know, sort of like they did with Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. and some of the Marvel movies.
Are they going to be merging the different universes together?
I don't know, because when Agents of S.H.I.E.L.D. started, it was explicitly part of the MCU, and then they kind of said, nah, not so much anymore. So there were a few episodes that were tied into the second Thor movie that I remember, and then it, I don't know. It's an interesting idea.
I think with the possibilities that the Ghost Rider arcs opened up for, like, different worlds and stuff like that, how cool would it be to get the X-Men Quicksilver into the MCU?
That could be fun.
And what would Wanda's
take on that be?
Relationship with that Quicksilver be like?
Yeah. Right? How strained and weird would that be? You know, I just thought it was weird though that 1 minute I was looking at Wanda and his real name?
Paul Quicksilver. Bettany.
No, Quicksilver.
Quicksilver.
In the comic,
it's
Pietro, right?
Pietro.
How cool would it be? I mean, how weird was it to see Wanda and Pietro in the Marvel Cinematic Universe, and then in the next minute, their husband and wife in the Godzilla movie? That freaked me out. Yeah. I didn't know what to think about that. I was kind of like, oh, I like these actors. And then I'm like, wait, they were brother and sister a minute ago. This is hurting my brain.
Well, the actors playing brother and sister on Dexter were married.
Oh, really?
Yeah.
That adds an extra layer to that almost romance subplot they had in that last season.
Yeah, that that last season that nobody likes.
And then we get those uncomfortable Ultimate Avengers relationship between Pietro and Wanda conversations.
Yeah.
Strangeness. Yeah. So where do you think they're going to go with this as far as like, I'm kind of thinking that this could all be in either Vision's or Wanda's mind.
You know, Wanda, the one in the comics is so different than one in the MCU. In the MCU, she kind of just gives you the whammy and throws magic bolts. The one in the comics can change the entire reality of your universe by just saying three words. Mm-hmm. So it's, I don't know, Jacob, you had a big thought there. You just kind of swallowed. What are you thinking?
So many people don't understand Wanda's powers, and I've seen one show outside of non-modern comics get her powers correct, and that was Wolverine and the X-Men. They had Scarlet Witch show up there, and her powers worked exactly the way her powers were supposed to work. She is not a reality alterator. She does not work chaos magic. She is a probability manipulator. What are the chances that that gun you're pointing at her won't go off? Click. 100% according to her. What are the chances that, you know, that electrical supervillain, his powers lance over to that pool of water over there, screwing him up? Pretty good to her.
I understand your point. I will say I agree with you based on how she's portrayed in the comics. That is not what we saw in the MCU.
That is not what we saw in the MCU. Her powers are very much wild and chaos magic in the MCU. She alters minds. She manipulates matter. She's got wild, weird powers. In the MCU, it follows much more her powers the way they were depicted in the Ultimates universe.
Yeah, I would agree. Interesting stuff. You know, there's been a rumor that Chris Evans wants to come back, and they've already talked about him as an old man Steve cameo in the Falcon and the Winter Soldier. And there's rumors that he's been floating the idea of a Peggy and Steve, you know, teaming up together during the Cold War for secret missions.
Kind Ooh, of thing. That'd be cool.
I would love every minute of that.
Yeah, that'd be dope.
I love superheroes in the Cold War. Those are two flavors that go great together in my book. But I don't know. I have trouble seeing it happen. But Craig, what do you think?
I think that they could, you know, with the Cold War being what it is, they could latch onto the super spy kind of thing and like have Peggy be the, you know, the accomplished spy with the intelligence officer and Cap be, you know, Cap. And that sounds an awful lot like, you know, like a really cool game about superpowered super spies in the 60s.
Heck, you could even have the original Ant-Man and Wasp team up. And wow, we should write this. What the fuck? This is
great. Yeah. There's plenty going on in the 60s that, you know, that you could kind of wrap together.
Yeah. Yeah.
Into that.
Okay. What's the most awkward segue we've ever had in this show, Walt?
There was that one. Yeah. There was that one time with the underwear that we never talk about.
Okay, this is more awkward than that because now we're talking about Good Strong Hands from Ribburger Games.
Hooray!
Fairies helping humans and humans helping fairies.
Sure.
All right, I just saw Craig grit his teeth a little bit. So, Craig, why don't you take the mic and explain to all of us what exactly the premise is behind the game?
Oh, I mean, and that's kind of what it is. In Good Strong Hands, you're playing like fantastical creatures, and some of them are you know, fey type creatures, but then there's also kind of elemental types and sort of anthropomorphized animals, and you're working to stop the void from destroying your world. This malevolent force of entropy returns to Reverie every few hundred years and tries to wipe it out. But heroes rise up, and this time around, you're one of the heroes, and you're out to deal with all of the chaos and terribleness that the void can cause from, you know, kind of straight up more traditional fantasy kind of you know, threats with monsters and evil baddies and stuff like that, to just dealing with a world that's going through a crisis and dealing with people who are scared and people who are forced to flee from their homeland because of things that are happening. And there's, you know, there's a lot of different directions you can take it. So you can play a game that's, you know, a little more kind of physically combat, you know, kill them, you know, deal with the monsters. And you can also get very into kind of dealing with the people and the kind of existential threat that they're all under. So lots of opportunities, lots of little different types of stories that are all part of what the void is bringing.
Yeah, see, I do dig the video and some of the subtle animations you have there. Really kind of gives the art a little pop. And definitely getting into kind of a never-ending story, legend. I hesitate to say Wizard of Oz, but it is people in a fantastical setting, you know, coming together to fight against a common enemy. But
sure, there's you know, mild flavors of Oz, of Neverland, of you know, Pan's Labyrinth, of various fantastic worlds that have some darker things. And not to say that you're going to see this critter or this character or this person or this type of being, you know, just ported over with the serial number scratched off. But there are influences aplenty.
Okay, cool. It looks like you've already done some actual plays. How have those gone?
The actual plays have been a lot of fun because, like I was describing, there's like a lot of different directions you can take it. So I specifically looked and kind of tried to get at least, you know, some of the actual plays to go in different directions. So like Red Moon Role Playing, they lean darker with their stuff. They like dark worlds. So when we did it, we kind of, I ran a game for them and it was a darker and it got a little icky and gross at times. And, you know, it was kind of occasionally even a little revolting, like, you know, that sort of, but it was ultimately the characters were out for, you know, to accomplish a heroic task. And then there have been other games that have been much more fanciful. The one that I ran for some friends this weekend that's listed on the Kickstarter page right now, it says Wishes and Waffles. That was like, it took this hard left turn when one of the characters decided that, well, humans are coming through from Earth, and they're bringing with them things that they know about that the people of Reverie don't know about, which includes waffles. And it took on a life of its own in that respect and became part of the story. So it, you know, it has that fantasy element and that sort of fairy tale element that you can kind of have these weird non sequiturs and things that don't really fit, but it's all fine because it's all fanciful.
As a passionate fan of breakfast food, I am in favor of waffles playing a pivotal role in the story. So I noticed that these are kind of cool, shorter sessions, like an hour to 2 hours. Is that how the game's designed, sort of for one shots, or is it more for campaign play or a bit of both?
These generally ran like the two and a half for, well, by the time you did all like the introductory stuff that you do at the beginning of end of actual play podcasts and streams, you know, 2.5 hours. Like the game runs, I ran play tests in with a group that knows the rules, so you don't have to explain, you don't have to teach. You can like tell a story in 2 hours pretty easily, but 3 or 4 hours can work fine as well. You can kind of stretch it out and build out additional challenges and kind of let character moments really hang and settle in a little bit more, as opposed to pushing story forward.
Okay, so it sounds like it really is geared towards one shots. Am I getting that right?
It is to an extent. You can play one shot, certainly. I think there's something special that lives in playing it as a campaign, because when you're playing the game, there's the possibility that, again, this is all this kind of light fantasy stuff, but there's a dark side to it, like Neverending Story has in it, and Legend has in it, where your character might get corrupted by the void. The void is always seeking to turn heroes into its own agents. So you're fighting against that, and there are mechanics that support that. So as you're playing in a longer campaign, you have to kind of, you know, decide, are you going to fight against it constantly? Are you going to walk the edge? Are you going to risk it all? And then there's in the GM section, there's a description of like a three phase campaign arc where you can have, you know, for each third of the campaign, you tweak the rules slightly. It's not really tweaking the rules, but there's like a couple of little rule type things that you'd layer on that make that falling to corruption thing tougher to avoid. You just kind of add an element onto it. So by the time you get to the really dark version of the campaign, where it's all or nothing and you really have to win, like there's a greater chance that your character might fall. So you have to really fight against it.
All right. So we first got in touch with you back in the days of the Capers RPG.
Yeah.
Because as a podcast, we're kind of focused on superhero stuff, hence the discussion of WandaVision at the top of the show. But and you've done a whole lot of Capers. I want to say you've got at least four different variations on the Capers superhero RPG. This is kind of a hard left turn for you into a different genre. What brought that about?
Well, for a while, I found myself thinking like, I'm never going to do a fantasy game unless I can come up with like a really interesting spin. Because I certainly don't, I'm certainly not interested in doing kind of a traditional swords and sorcery, middle magic to high magic sort of thing. There's 50 games that do that. And so if you're looking for a variation, you can find the variation that you want. So it was, you know, just kind of bouncing around in my head for a long time. And I found myself rewatching some of these old movies, and I was, you know, a little nostalgic for the 80s. And I was like kind of looking at like the climate right now in culture there is this nostalgia for the 80s. And I hit on these movies that had these kind of light fantastical elements, but with this little underpinning of darkness. And I thought I can make a game out of that.
Oh, cool. You know, while we're talking inspirations, that's always a fun topic. What was your inspiration list? Your touchstones for this book?
Well, the big ones here are listed on the page, which are Neverending Story, which is pretty obvious. The Void is just the nothing. You know, it's just a renaming of the nothing. Legend, Dark Crystal, Labyrinth, Willow. Those are the big ones. But then I said, there's like, it touches on a number of different things there. I'm blanking on the name. What's the science fiction horror movie? The team of women go into the realm where everything's all colors and things are getting morphed and changed.
It was recent with Natalie Portman.
I'm blanking on the name. What's that? Right, right. So I mean, there's a story scheme that's presented in the game that's basically like a two-page adventure outline that's kind of built around the idea of things evolving and changing, and you know, that's kind of inspired by that. And so I just took like different elements of movies that have some of those same kind of themes. Like Oblivion is like, it is this fantastical, pretty, and they see these strange, you know, animals and strange plants, but then there's also these really horrible things that are underneath it. So,
I'm sorry, it's Annihilation.
Annihilation.
That's right. You're right.
It was a shun at the end.
I'm really impressed with the art. It looks, as coming from an artist, it looks like very classic storybook art. I like the theme of it, the look of it. Are you going for more of that? Considering the look and theme of it, the more like family friendly, more younger audience for this game.
The game does have the dark stuff kind of built into it, and the artwork, you know, is very much hits on that. But I thought, you know, early in playtesting, I had people saying like, if you took out some of the darker bits, this is very easily a family friendly game. So in the book, there's like a layer of like, okay, if you just tweak this, you know, tweak these two or three things, and it's not, you know, you don't have to worry about the dark icky void stuff, and it's just you know, fun cute critters beings, these fantastical people who are, you know, fighting against monsters, and they're helping each other and teamwork and all that fun stuff. So you can turn it family friendly very easily.
Yeah, the teamwork elements I'm really enjoying from taking a look at it. I like the fact that, you know, the fantastical creatures can't handle it on their own. They need humans. The humans can't do it on their own. They need the fantastical creatures. Only by working together can we all succeed in the end. That's a really good theme.
And there are mechanics that are kind of built into that too. For some of, like, there's literally some of the character playbooks. We just played one this weekend where the pixie has an ability called Boundless Heart, where they're very good at helping other people overcome their own fears and trouble, and dealing with bad situations. So the pixie can just help you with that and can kind of bolster you and give you a mechanical advantage to overcome a fear or something like that. So I didn't drown it. I didn't drown the game in those sorts of things, but it's all kind of there. Like, you see bits and pieces of it, and like tried to keep some of the abilities fantastical as well, where like you can spend a point of spirit and it says, you know, you do a dance and then this happens. So like putting these fantastical things in conjunction, it's like it's not just mechanical. You don't just spend a spirit and this effect happens. You spend a spirit and you perform this song, or you do a dance, or you help a person, or you do a favor for somebody, or whatever it might be, and then you gain something out of it. So you're encouraged to kind of build the narrative of what your character is doing, and it's often, you know, a lot of times it's performative, not in the bad way, but like actual performance, you know, or it's aiding somebody and helping somebody with something.
All right, cool. And it looks like we're doing just really well over there. You are over. You've doubled your goal. You have 24 days left to go. So you are sitting pretty, sir. Looks like this is going to be a great campaign for you.
Yeah, it took off very strong. We hit the funding goal and a stretch goal inside of a day and a half. We're rolling toward a second stretch goal. I'm confident. I feel pretty good about getting through all the stuff that I want to do in order to kind of pack the book full of more stuff. So we're adding content, basically, like making sure that all the playbooks make it into the game, make sure that all the story schemes make it into the game, just kind of adding page count and mm-hmm. and quantity of good, fun stuff. Good, strong book pages to make it into the book.
What's the second stretch goal?
The second stretch goal right now is to add well, I shouldn't say the last two, but like the last two that a lot of people know about, to add two playbooks to the game, which are for brownies and red caps. And then three more story schemes, which are like adventure outlines. And then there's like the next thing up is going to be like a PDF thing that everybody, it's like a support material thing that everybody's going to want. I haven't really told people what it is yet. I've been
hinting. You know, we do like exclusives.
Yeah, let's put in. I've done the exclusive thing a few times with some of the other stuff that's coming down the road. Let's do the exclusive for here. Anybody who's paying attention to this,
Hang on. I'm going to give you the big screen. 1 second.
Oh, nice.
Whoosh. Boom. Craig's got a big head now. Go.
the next stretch goal after the one we're going after right now, the stretch goal that's being talked about as being a bunch of PDF stuff, is going to be form fillable. Character playbooks for every playbook in the game. So there's, you know, by the time we get to that, there'll be 10. There's the possibility of two more after that. Every individual playbook will get a form fillable PDF version of that playbook so that you can just, you know, because the game has a lot of checkboxes and things that you kind of track through that. You select things. Everybody plays out, you play a character out of a playbook. So we're going to take the time to not only do a form fillable character sheet, but we're going to do 10 or 12 of them.
Oh, sweet. Okay. And you heard it here first on Banff, people. So now is a good time to jump on the bandwagon, go over to Kickstarter, search for Good Strong Hands. I promise you it's the only one you're going to find with that title, and back it. Good time to jump on the bandwagon, and we will have the links in the show notes as well. So, hey, appreciate coming on talking about that, Craig.
Thank you for having me. It's always a good time. I like talking to you folks. What are we? Do we have anything else?
We have another hard, awkward segue going straight into.
I just asked you a question. That's a great segue.
I like it when it's awkward, though. Okay.
Okay. Thanks for joining us, everybody. It's been a great episode. I'm gonna go.
Anything
else? I'm sorry.
Yes. Holt number one. Tactical sci-fi action. Walt, tell us all about this.
So Cedric Hood, who's a friend of the podcast, launched just a few ago and is looking for some funding. The trailer's really intense. They did a really great job on this. After the trailer's done, you scroll down, you can check out some of the art. But this is basically like a, his love letter to like the tactical action stuff we loved as kids. Lots of action. It's a black and white comic, so you get that sense of like noir to it. It starts off before the Cold War and then transitions into modern day. The art is very kinetic. There's a lot of stuff going on. A lot of mixture. Yeah, a lot of stuff. Man of action. So as you can see there's lots of scene changes, tons of weapons and just changing from one scene to the next. Cedric's done a lot of work on this. He's been at this for probably a good 3 to 6 months. He's been kind of hinting at this. Like I said, this is like his love letter to Metal Gear Solid, things like L.A. Noir. So you can really tell the influences in here as you're going through the pages and going through the Kickstarter. You can start off if you're not really sure at the $5 level, which is just the PDF, and then it goes from there. You get everything from physical copies to all sorts of art, and I mean there's craziness abounding in this Kickstarter. And like I said, Cedric has been a big supporter of the BAM podcast for a long time. So if you really like the community and really like some of the things we do, you're probably going to really enjoy this. So as you can see by this the entrance video. They put a lot of work into this. So, check them out. You won't be disappointed.
Cool. Yeah. That was an intense video. And
That looks slick.
Yeah. When he does the voiceover, it adds that little punch because you kind of get a little behind the scenes action going. So yeah. Check them out. They did an amazing, amazing job.
Sweet. Okay. Yeah. This is some nice looking art.
You know, we got a little bit of Michael Bay lens flare in there. You know, we got, the black and white art is very, very good. It's got that duotone kind of stuff like you saw in like the Japanese manga during the 1980s.
I really miss sometimes there's some really good comics with black and white art, and you know, a lot of people get held up in the glitz of color, but this is some good stuff where you're just focusing on what's happening on the page,
you know, and like I said, having sci-fi, glowing eye baby chasing the main character, it's just, you're like, what is going on? I need to know about this now.
Yeah, it looks good. We should have Cedric on again to talk about this.
Yeah, let me see if I can bug him because he totally didn't know I was doing this. So,
well, we're going to have his Kickstarter address is in the comments. We'll have it in the show notes. Check it out. He's close. He's coming up on halfway with about 2.5 weeks left. So show him some love. He's a good guy. And that is about our show. Anything else that we want to cover, guys, before we wrap it up?
No, I think we're good.
Please support the BAM podcast Patreon.
Yes, Jacob, for the win.
Yeah.
give us a dollar, just a dollar.
Mike's like, what he said.
What he said. Why use many words?
Can afford $1 a month. Give us a dollar.
Just a dollar. We need
coffee.
Coffee, cookies. I mean, look at us. We're famished. Help us out. So
we can't even shave. We can't shave.
It's true. It's true.
It's the BAM Fraser's Fund. So
yeah, I shaved this morning and look what happened.
I shaved an hour ago. I don't know what
I'm shaving right now.
Okay, I think we're getting punchy. Time to wrap things up. So
need caffeine.
Folks, thanks for coming by and stop back on Friday because we've got Ron Mars coming by to talk about the big DC Comics winter event that's coming up. Actually, I think it's even called Endless Winter, coming out this December, and Ron Mars is writing most of it, and he'll be here in Banff to tell us all about it. So that's going to be, well, what's the time on that? You remember?
I do not.
I believe it's Friday at 5 p.m. Eastern. That we can confirm. So, all right, cool, cool. Sounds good. Craig, always a pleasure having you on, sir. Thanks again.
Thank you.
To all of our listeners and viewers, thanks for checking out the Banff Podcast, and we'll see you next time.